It's Earth Day 2014, the 44th Earth Day, an appropriate time to take the pulse of the Chesapeake Bay. Earlier this month, the Maryland General Assembly finished a 90-day legislative session in which environmentalists had to fight off an attempt to repeal a stormwater bill it helped pass just 2 years ago. Land preservationists had to fight again for funds for open space. And an influential Maryland congressman, a Democrat, threw his weight against a wind energy farm in Somerset County. Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal talks about all that in this Earth Day edition of Midday on the Bay. Plus, bad news about a frog, good news about a rare bird. All coming up after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us for our second hour. Time again for Midday on the Bay, our monthly show produced in partnership with the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And it wouldn't be produced if not for a staff reporter from the CBJ. That's Rona Cabell. Rona, welcome back to the show. Nice to see you.
Thank you. You too.
And it's the special Earth Day edition of Midday on the Bay. We moved it to today because of the occasion. It's the 44th Earth Day. So thanks for being here. And look, we got some good news to share today, some bad news, some in-between news about the Chesapeake Bay, about the environment in general, all sorts of neat stories to talk about during this hour of the show. This is a busy hour we have ahead. But, Rona, I just want to take a minute and mention this report out this morning. Nathan Sterner mentioned it on the news this morning here at WYPR, and I see it's in the Capital Gazette. They have a story about Chesapeake Bay grasses being up by some 24% in certain areas of the bay. You may not be surprised to hear this, but mid-bay waters, between the Honga River in Dorchester County and the Pocomoke Sound, way down near the Maryland-Virginia line, as well as the Upper Bay, Susquehanna Flats, had more grasses compared to 2012. And in some areas, as I say, the water quality has improved enough, so we have these bay grasses at 24% increase over last year. Why is this important?
Well, it's important because the bay grasses are key for very many species in the bay, particularly crabs, which haven't been doing that well in the last couple of years. And I have to say the midday piece is a bit of a surprise to me.
Midday
piece, sorry. But the Susquehanna Flats, that story's been ongoing since 2008 or so. Those grasses historically were... That area was historically filled with bay grasses and a huge breeding ground for ducks. And then it went away really for several decades and it came back and it has continued to grow. And it is one of the rare success stories that we have in Chesapeake Bay.
Well, that's good. The Capital Gazette story focuses on what's going on in Anne Arundel County waters in that area. And the news is not as good there. Unfortunately, it says in the Severn, the South, the Magothy and Patuxent rivers, things are not as great. Some bay grasses disappeared in certain areas.
Right. And that has to do with a lot of different causes. Destruction of habitat due to development, pollution. And it's in those areas, it's a real problem for the little critters who live and use those areas for shelter, like turtles and frogs. And a lot of areas live in the shallows in the bay grasses and use that area for all sorts of purposes, in addition to, of course, the crabs.
I just want to mention to our listeners, I have a real treat for you in this hour of the show, the yellow-crowned night heron. We're going to sort of celebrate this beautiful and rare bird that's being seen in Baltimore, in a specific area of Baltimore City. And we have some photographs to share with you contributed by an area photographer that we'll be sharing with you during this hour of the show. You can find them on the Dan Rodericks Facebook page. But here in the early part of the show, Rona, we haven't had a chance to talk to you about the environment and the legislative session, the General Assembly session that ended up a couple of weeks ago. So before, let's go into some of these things. Number one, the stormwater bill. Let's talk about that because we had mentioned it on an earlier show, and as you predicted, there were attempts to repeal it.
Right. This session was stormwater, stormwater, stormwater. There were 20 bills that were attempting to roll back the stormwater bill that was passed in 2012. You might remember this was called the rain tax by some. This was a provision that Baltimore City and the nine largest counties would create some sort of a stormwater utility that would be used to assess homeowners a fee of some sort to basically deal with, treat the stormwater coming off of their homes. And so there were 20 bills this session to try to roll it back, delay it, make some counties immune from it. In the end, a very weak provision prevailed for just Carroll and Frederick County that allows them to use property tax to pay their the stormwater utility fee.
Do you have any idea why the Maryland Department of Environment went along with that? Because the idea was to keep this away from property taxes. They have a separate fee dedicated to stormwater eradication instead of it coming out of general operating budgets of the counties.
Well, it was interesting because not too long before this passed, the counties, Carroll, Frederick, and actually Harford, which had thought about trying to repeal its fee under David Craig's leadership, had written a letter to Maryland Department of the Environment and the Attorney General asking, hey, is this all right if we do this? And they got back a very stern rebuke saying, no, it is not all right if you do this. You are required to do this. And every county is doing this. And here's why it's important. And then this passed. And I don't know, maybe they were just worn down. Mm-hmm. But also, What is in effect happening is Carroll and Frederick are still having to pay the fee. It's not as though they're exempt from the fee. They still have to pay it. And if they want to use property tax to pay it, in my opinion, that's foolish because it's really an impervious surface tax. And you can have a very large property, say a $10 million estate. It doesn't necessarily mean that your home is large. You may, most of that property may be in wilderness. So, To me, it makes much more sense to have a fair assessment of impervious surface.
Based on impervious
right,
surface.
Exactly. Yeah. And charge it that way. But if they don't want to do it, as long as they're still paying it, I guess it's not Maryland Department of the Environment must have figured, you know what, let's stop fighting this and let's just, you know, get them to pay what they owe and move on.
So if you whine long enough, you get your way. With the MDE and the state. That's all. That's Dan's editorial comment. All right.
No comment from me on
that
one.
Let's go back. Let's go. Here's another topic we talked about earlier, the black liquor bill. You have to explain black liquor and what happened in the session this year.
Okay. So black liquor is a byproduct of the paper-making process. Paper companies burn waste and use it to make energy. They've been doing it for decades. It's an age-old process. In the last few years, there's been a push to get black liquor out of the renewable energy standard portfolio. And what that means is companies that burn the black liquor have been getting renewable energy credits that would otherwise go to wind and solar and geothermal and other renewable energy sources. And they've been basically these companies like BGE, they have to buy a certain amount of renewable energy. And they've been spending their renewable energy dollars on black liquor. And so the idea was not to ban the burning of black liquor, but just to get it out of the renewable energy standard. And once again, this bill failed. And the reason it failed was because paper companies, all out of state, except for one, which would have been grandfathered in on the bill, paper companies and their union workers lobbied hard and said that this would affect jobs if this black liquor wasn't allowed to be part of the standard. And they prevailed again. So as of now, this industrial process is still considered a renewable energy under Maryland's law.
Rona, we've also talked about phosphorus and the new management tool that's supposed to reduce the amount of this pollutant, phosphorus, going into the waterways along the shores. So any progress there in this session?
The only progress is in getting the new phosphorus management tool further delayed. Shore Democrat Jim Mathias tried to pass a bill to require an economic study of the phosphorus legislation. The Maryland Department
Another
of...
Another study.
Yes.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it's going to have a huge effect. About half the farms on the Eastern Shore, according to University of Maryland's research, have an oversaturation of phosphorus and are going to have less. Now, what that means is the chicken manure that farmers put on the fields, they're not going to be able to put it on the fields anymore. Perhaps not at all, or at least not in the numbers that they have been putting it on. And so this is going to have a huge economic effect. And the Maryland Department of Agriculture has been trying, in my opinion, valiantly to put in this phosphorus standard. And it has been delayed over the last year. It has been delayed several times, and it's going to be delayed further with this economic study that they now have to do.
pesticides, another thing that we talked about earlier on the show when we were looking at what was going to be happening in a legislative session.
Some good news on pesticides. A pesticide reporting fee was passed, and that will make companies like Bayer that make the pesticides have to register the chemicals. There already is a fee, but they raised the fee by $10, and that will create about $127,000 in the budget to start a pesticide database. And what that means is
back up a little bit. This is something I assumed we had.
Right.
But we actually don't have an accounting of pesticides in use in Maryland.
We don't have it. The Maryland Department of Agriculture has said that they can get it if they need it. In other words, if there's a problem and a farmer, say in Glen Arm, is spraying something and people are getting sick, the Maryland Department of Agriculture can find out what was being sprayed and, you know, get that information to the public. But barring some sort of epidemic like that, there isn't really a way to know. If my neighbor spraying something and I want to know what it is, I don't have a way to know that. Hmm. So this database would get us started. It would get us started in knowing what's going on. And I would say that this is not only important for human health, but it's very important for animals like bees, frogs, bats. We're having a lot of issues with these animals dying, and we don't know why. And there's a lot of research going on that there could be some sort of endocrine disruptor with pesticides. But in order to really figure out what's going on, you really need to know what's being sprayed.
So some progress there.
Yes.
All right. Now we get to a story that I found a little bit weird. Okay. Steny Hoyer, Congressman Hoyer, shows up in Annapolis where he used to be, president of the Senate years ago before
right.
Mike Miller. Boy, what a memory I have. That goes back a ways. But anyway, he shows up there to express opposition to a planned wind energy farm in Somerset County in southern Maryland. So
it is a puzzler, Dan. It's weird because this is the first time in, I think, two decades that Steny Hoyer has gone back to Annapolis to testify on anything. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to stop this wind farm from being built on the Eastern Shore because he said it would interfere with the Patuxent River Naval Air Station's radar signal. Now, the Navy said that it could be worked out, that if the wind turbines didn't spin at the certain times that the radar system was going, that this wouldn't be a problem. And there was a lot riding on this, Dan, because there are many farmers in Somerset County that would be able to participate in this farm by adding a wind turbine to their farm and making some money that would, you know, offset the cost of running a farm these days, which
right.
is high.
Right. And we'd put people to work actually building these things and
absolutely.
Constructing them.
It was a $200 million investment.
And what gets me is the Navy said, okay, we're cool with this. Go ahead and build the farm. And if we're concerned, if the concern is real, that it affects our radar system, the turbines we'll shut them down and we'll work this out.
Right.
So why did Hoyer show up to testify against it?
Well, what he said was that, every 10 years or so, the government undertakes this process called the Base Realignment and Closure Act. And Maryland has lost and also benefited from this when certain bases close and then other bases move. So as Aberdeen Proving Ground has grown a bunch and Fort Meade has grown a bunch, other bases across the country have closed. And he said he's worried that because this base is such an economic engine in southern Maryland that maybe the Navy would decide to close it and move somewhere, and that would jeopardize...
Because of the wind farm?
Because of the wind farm.
Even though now they're saying they're okay with it.
Right. So what the bill did was it postponed this for a year, but the wind company, Pioneer Wind, Pioneer Green, is saying, hey, that was a $4 million investment we spent here working on this, and we're not necessarily sure we're going to stick around for a year. So it may, in fact, have killed it. And what's interesting is climate change. This naval base is right on the Patuxent River, which is not immune from sea level rise or climate change. So you would think it would be a good thing to invest in wind energy to sort of offset this detrimental effects of climate change
right.
and sea level rise.
Where's O'Malley on this? This is his baby, right?
Well, interesting. He's been very, very pro-wind, and I personally think it's a passion of his and not just something he says. And he has the power to veto this bill. So we'll see if he does. It should be coming up in the next several weeks. He doesn't comment on whether or not he's going to sign bills.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what he does because it if he doesn't decide to veto it, it's a pretty strong statement about the future of wind in Maryland.
Rona Cabell from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. One more issue from the General Assembly I wanted to ask you about, because I wrote a column about it. We did a segment of Midday on this topic, and that is a program, Open Space in Maryland, which has been raided over and over again by the General Assembly and by governors to pay for other things. It just hasn't been fully funded in years. There's a waiting list, we're told, of some 145 farmers in Maryland waiting to get their development rights of their land turned over to the state, to sell them to the state through program Open Space so that they can continue to be farmers and have their land in ag preservation. What happened there? What's the bottom line with this?
Well, you're right. The Open Space hasn't been fully funded, and the state now owes Open Space $100 million that it hasn't paid back. What the state did was it took the cash out of Open Space and replaced the cash with bond funds. And that works out all right if the state is actually ready to pay back the bond fund. And in this case, it wasn't. So
it was borrowing money
Give
the program Open Space.
Right. And the way Open Space works is it's a percentage of the transfer tax, a 0.5% of the transfer tax goes into buying properties.
It's very small. Every time there's a transfer tax, a real estate transaction, what is it? 0.5%?
Yes. Yeah, so like
goes into program Open Space.
$500, $1,000, you know, just a small piece. So the idea is when demand is high and there's a lot of transactions and a lot of development pressure, the fund is high.
Right.
And when demand is low, the fund is low. The problem is that you might have some properties that come open that Open Space would like to buy, and it needs to have the cash ready to be nimble because it's competing with developers, and developers can't always be as nimble, and that can be an incentive for a seller. So you have an offer from the state in hand to preserve your land, and then you have a higher offer from a developer to develop the land, but you won't get your money right away, and he wants to buy it under option and all these other constraints. So the state's offer looks pretty attractive, but the state can't even make the offer if it doesn't have the cash.
Rona, thank you for that wrap-up of the General Assembly session of 2014. This is the Earth Day edition of Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And joining us when we get back, Dave Lichtenheim, photographer who lives in Ellicott City, has been taking pictures of a beautiful bird that's taken up residence and nesting in the middle of the city, in the middle of Baltimore. We'll tell you about that when we get back and how you can see some photographs. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. It's Midday on the Bay. Our producers, Jonathan Aaron and senior producer Nikki Gamer, posted some information on my Facebook page that gets you to the Maryland State Board of Elections site and tells you about voter registration. To follow up on our earlier hour of the show today, Midday Politics, paperwork has to be into the Board of Elections by June 3rd to change voter registration. So if you're Democrat, you want to vote in the Republican primary or vice versa, or if you're an independent and you want to vote in either primary on June 24th, you have until June 3rd to make up your mind to do that. Dan Roderick's here. Now continuing with this hour of the show, Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell, staff writer from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. If you stand by the bridge at Wyman Park Drive on the east entrance of Druid Hill Park, right across from the Steve Silver Building, you know where that is. That's here in Baltimore, on the north side of Baltimore. You'll be at eye level with a rare bird, the yellow-crowned night heron. These birds are doing their thing right above Jones Falls Valley there in the heart of the city, mating. I guess apparently having babies. So photographer Dave Lichtenheim is joining us. He came in from Ellicott City to be with us in Studio A today because Dave's been taking pictures of these amazing birds and impressive photographs. Hello, Dave. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. So you have a whole folio of these photographs just of this particular night heron, yellow-crowned night heron in Wyman Park?
Well, I have portfolio of those, but other birds as well that I have photographed in the past.
Okay, but this yellow-crowned night heron, this is a rare bird, and how did you find out about it in being in Baltimore?
Well, I found out about it. I found out about it from fellow photographers. I have a sort of a network of people. I also run this website, Conowingo Bald Eagles, on Facebook, and people contact me through that and tell me about other nesting birds.
Have you seen one of these before, a yellow-crowned
night heron? Well, I've been coming here several years now. There are two types of similar birds. There's a black-crowned night heron and the yellow-crowned, and the yellow-crowned's more rare. for this area, but especially right in the heart of Baltimore. It's very unique.
Rona, what do you know about this?
Well, I heard about it from Dave. We became friends through the Conowingo Birds page. But I had been hearing about the birds for a while, just because running in Druid Hill Park and doing the Jones Falls Trail bike trip. And people sort of whisper about the birds. Oh, have you seen the birds? And sometimes they'll call them the golden crested night herons, or the herons or the birds. A lot of people stop and look at them for a few minutes, and then they go about their jog. And so I was kind of curious about how did they arrive in this place in the city. And what I learned from the Baltimore Birding Club is that they have been in the area for a long, long time, but they used to nest at Stony Run. And in 2009 or 2010, I was told there was a storm and they lost their place in Stony Run, and they started coming to the Round Falls, where Dave has photographed them for quite some time. And now there are several nests several nesting pairs of birds. And it's a pretty special thing.
Now, Dave, you were up taking some more photographs today.
Yes.
Now, we can't see these yet because they're still in your camera, right? But no, it's okay. It's okay. What did you see today when you went there?
Well, there are approximately 11 birds amongst two trees. The majority of 10 of the birds are in one tree, and they like to nest over water high up. I guess it's
So the Jones Falls is down
right
there.
Right below it.
Right.
Nice area. Good view probably on their nest. Two of the nests have five eggs. The parents are sitting. They take turns sitting on the eggs.
So obviously you're at an advantage where you can actually see the eggs.
You can see from the bridge, or you can also shoot from below where the waterfall round falls is.
Right.
Dave, about how far away are the trees from the bridge, the viewing area?
Looking down?
Yeah, how far would you say it
20
is?
Feet.
Just 20 feet. Is that close?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, again, I think someone said, Rona, this is called the Cedar Avenue Bridge.
Oh, is it?
Someone said that on Facebook. I'm not sure if that's what it's called, and I didn't have a chance to check. I just know this as the road where the Steve Silver Company is. It's really a bridge that goes into Druid Hill Park.
That's right? What I know it as. And I would like to sort of urge, if anyone from the Baltimore City Parks Department is listening, it would be great if this area were a little more accessible. It's sort of like a Baltimore, you have to know it to know it thing. There is a sign that says Jones Falls Trail, and then you walk down kind of a paved switchback and cross Falls Road, but there's no crosswalk, and there's no sign saying anything about the birds or anything of that sort. And then you sort of climb down this hill, and then you get to a really nice viewing platform that is named for James Rouse, which the city spent money on, clearly. But,
oh, I didn't know about that. So you're talking about down on Falls Road,
right? So you can
below this bridge.
You can either go up to the top of the bridge, and you can park. There's private parking, but there is a lot, I guess, you can use on the weekend.
Street parking.
Yeah, street parking, but not very much of it, I don't think. And then you can look at the top of the bridge. And then you can also go down, follow the path, and then across Falls Road, right below the Baltimore Streetcar Museum.
Okay.
And there's a red bicycle there, but no sign or anything saying, you know, yellow-crowned night heron viewing area or any such
thing.
Well,
do we want that? I mean, we're talking about it on the radio, but Dave, obviously these birds don't care too much about the humans that are walking by on the bridge. They're kind of, well, aware but oblivious, or they don't care.
They're
not
don't
disturbed.
Appear to care at all. There's a lot of noise in the area.
Yeah.
The light rail goes right by there.
Yeah. It's nice. You know, it sort of mutes out all the waterfalls, sort of mutes out all the noise surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good location.
Okay. And I'm surprised at the number. You said there might be 11 adult birds?
Well, one gentleman has spotted about 18 birds total.
Wow.
And they fly up and down. They're not just located.
And are they all the yellow-crowned night
yes.
heron?
Yes.
Wow. And this is a big deal. Okay. Because I'm not, I had never seen one of these. I've seen the great blue heron in Baltimore City. I've seen
them. The great blue are substantially larger.
Okay.
The interesting part about watching these birds is they're, right now, is their mating displays. They're beautiful. They have beautiful plumage. They do like a handshaking. One will do a very interesting rendition of flashing its feathers at the other one. And then a couple seconds later, the other, the other sex will flash back. And that's part of this ritual. And you can see all that. It's still going on even today.
And the result is five eggs in two separate nests.
They usually have like one egg a day or one egg every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, two of them have five eggs each, and the third one has three. And there's at least 11 or 12 birds there that haven't started making nests. They'll either use existing nests or they'll rebuild it. And watching them rebuild is really fun.
It's fun because the male will bring a stick back to the nest, and the female will sort of assess the stick and kind of decide whether it's good enough.
She's the interior designer.
That's very funny.
She moves the stick very particularly into different locations.
Boy, this must be interesting to watch. Dave, you sound like you go there almost every day.
Not quite every day, but
a lot. But frequently.
In order to get good shots, you got to go back frequently.
Dave Lichtenheim was joining us. You also mentioned your Conowingo Bald Eagles Facebook page.
Yes.
I'll have to check that out today. I've been on the Stafford Road in Darlington in Harford County, and yes. I've seen folks assemble in the same area every year on the side of the road, and they're looking across the road and up to a very high old tree. May even be partially dead, that tree.
It is.
And there's a big old eagle's nest in
there. It's been there 25 or 30 years, some number like that.
So I may have driven past you taking pictures
it's
there.
It's possible. But go to Conowingo. That's where the big number.
Tell folks about that. There's a fisherman's park at Conowingo Dam.
Yes.
You can park your car. You don't have to fish when you're there. You just get out, and there's a platform, a viewing platform.
You can view all along the parking lot, and all year round there are bald eagles. Around Thanksgiving time period, when the weather gets cold up north and the rivers freeze, the bald eagles fish on the surface. When they can't fish, they come down south. They know Conowingo is an exceptionally good area, lots of varieties of fish there. You can see in upwards of 200 to 300 bald eagles in one day.
It's a great comeback story, isn't it?
It's probably the best bald eagle viewing area in the east, on the East Coast.
Dave, how long have you been photographing birds?
I started about 5 years ago, right before I went to South Africa. I bought a big lens, didn't know what I was doing. Met another gentleman who's a birder for about 50 years, and that got me hooked.
A question from one of our listeners, Jerome. Please ask your guest, Dave, if the scarlet tanager is a rare bird in Maryland. I photographed one on Sunday and had never seen one before. I was in the Gunpowder Falls area. This is an extraordinary bird that I've seen one time in my life in an oak forest, on the edge of an oak forest. It makes a cardinal look like he's dressed in pink. The scarlet tanager, this red, incredible red color with black on its wings. Right, Dave?
I have never seen one.
Okay, so I saw one once.
It is a rare bird. It's a forest interior dwelling bird, and so it lives deep inside the forest. And as we've been losing a lot of our forests, so have we also lost this bird. So it is a rare bird in Maryland, and the only place that I know that has them is the Patuxent Research Refuge up in Laurel, which has like 10,000 acres of forest.
Okay. I saw one in the Pretty Boy Watershed, the Upper Co area of Baltimore County once, 10 years ago. I'd love to see one again. Do you photograph shorebirds or water birds or any kind of birds?
Anything that'll fly off.
Okay. What other things have you seen in Baltimore City? I'm curious about that. What other birds?
Well, it's funny. You know, once you start learning about birds, you start seeing them more. I never even saw great blue herons. I must have been blind. But they're all over the place.
There's one, I think, if you come up Interstate 83 and you get off, it's either Cold Spring or Northern Parkway. I think it's Northern Parkway. There's usually one there every year in that big ditch that is the Jones Falls, and they're standing there waiting for something to swim along so it can have dinner. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here from Midday if you'd like to join us. Now, if you go to the Dan Rodrigues Facebook page, you'll see a picture of a yellow-crowned night heron, not Dave's picture, but look for the link on there to Dave's folio. He has numerous photographs of this rare bird.
One thing I just wanted to say, as a person who's not a photographer and as a person who generally doesn't have a lot of patience for much, if you go to either Conowingo or to the Round Falls and are looking for the birds, you really need to have some patience because they're not necessarily just going to appear. And you might have to go back two or three times to see something. This is something that I think people sometimes expect they're going to go somewhere because of Dave's photos and see this bird and it will be preening and displaying. And he spends a lot of time going back and waiting and watching. And so it isn't necessarily like Disney where you turn on the key
and there it is.
There it is. Yeah. So I just want to caution people because I hear from people, oh, I went to Conowingo and I didn't see anything.
Right.
If I hadn't gone to Conowingo with Dave, I probably wouldn't have seen anything either.
Do we know in the case of this particular bird, a yellow-crowned night heron, I guess rarely seen in Baltimore City in an urban area like this, is it because, do we know why? Is there any suspicion as to why it would choose that place? A good food source nearby?
Well, they choose areas that are over waterways, but they're typically more southern in nature and swampy areas.
I see.
They fish, you know, in areas that have shallow water, things like that. One thing I did want to say, if I have a second,
sure,
is that the waterway there is really in bad shape.
Yes.
And that is disturbing.
Trash
all over the place. And, you know, once you start photographing animals, you realize more and more how they're intertwined with the environment. So if this waterway is dirty and polluted, that's where they fish. They get their crabs and other things. And that particular waterway, I don't know, looks pretty darn dirty all the time. You see plastic floating down there. We really need to clean up our act. And people like me don't need to see the birds there. People that are in the county and city need to go out there and see what trash is, because it's going to kill the birds eventually.
It's coming from upstream.
Yep.
It comes from Baltimore City, too, but it also comes upstream. Anyone who stood at the Inner Harbor and seen where the Jones Falls empties into the harbor after a big, flushy rainstorm can see that trash, can see all the plastic that floats down there. It gets pretty depressing. But
yeah, it does. Jones Falls is getting a water wheel, a trash wheel pretty soon. So hopefully that will help. I did want to say that these yellow-crowned night herons, you asked about their rarity. They are endangered in New Jersey. They are endangered in a couple other states. And the reason is they've lost a lot of their habitat, and their habitat is largely wetlands. So one reason that they like the Jones Falls is because it offers them water for fishing, but it also offers them safe harbor. Those nests are, humans can look at them, but you really can't access them. They're above the falls, and they're, you know, as Dave said, about 20 feet from where a human being could stand. So they're pretty well protected. And I think that's why they've chosen it, because they've lost so much of their other habitat.
Okay, so if you go there on that bridge near Steve Silver, right, Dave? Just yeah. Look. Just look and admire, and then have a treat. While they're there, the yellow-crowned night heron, a rare sight in Baltimore City. Dave Lichtenheim, a photographer who lives in Ellicott City, joining us on the show today, and you can look for his folio of photographs on my Facebook page. Dave, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll take a little break here. We'll come back more with Rona Cabell, Midday on the Bay. I mean, your calls, anything you'd like to talk about on this Earth Day edition of Midday on the Bay, 410-662-8780. When we get back, a little bit about frogs with Rona. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Francesca posted on Facebook that, yes, she's seen these yellow-crowned night herons frequently in the Lake Walker neighborhood in North Baltimore. First sighted maybe 5 years ago. Lovely, she says. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here, Dan Rodericks. It's Midday on the Bay, our monthly edition of Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. We moved it to today instead of a Thursday because it's Earth Day 2014. Rona, before we move on to our other story, which has to do with frogs and a virus, we want to take a couple of calls here. Carolyn in Towson, we'll start with you. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Carolyn?
Good. We have a home in Towson, but we also have a place we go up in Perryville on the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep life lists at both homes. But we had an exciting event this year up at Perryville because one day we pulled into the house and realized we had five eagles in our tree right at the water's edge.
Wow. That must, what a sight that must have been. Did you try to take a picture, or did they fly away immediately when they saw you?
No, no, they hung out there for quite a while. I got pictures, and there were mature and immature both. And they tend to nest around the corner, around the point, in an area where there are farms and no home.
So you got pretty close to them. Now, have they been back?
They haven't been back yet, but they would be probably around the site now. We would canoe around to see them. We haven't done it yet, but they'd be probably nesting at this point.
Carolyn, thanks for that call. Dave Lichtenheim is still in the studio with us. So I guess they're not, the eagles aren't too concerned about humans being around either.
Well, some of them are pretty squeamish.
Oh, yeah?
Around Conowingo area, I think they're used to more people, and they will land in the trees very close to people. So you can get a very clear shot,
yeah,
or just observe them. Usually they'll fly up with a fish and try to hide so none of the other eagles. Usually there's six other eagles that will be chasing. They're a bunch of thieves.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I went to Blackwater Wildlife Refuge once, parked my car, stepped out, and within a second or two after I had stepped out of a car, an eagle came out of the sky somewhere, splashed in the water, and rose again with a fish in its talons. Like, thank you. Thank you very much. I didn't even have to put a quarter in the meter.
Right.
I mean, it was amazing. That was amazing. It was like on cue. Like, yeah, they were working for the tourists or something. It was amazing.
I saw an eagle once drop a fish right, almost hit the fisherman. And I imagine the fisherman wasn't doing a good enough job, so the eagle decided to help out.
Yeah. I got one day, it was fishing in the Gunpowder River way up in Moncton and not having a good day, not catching anything. And an osprey went right overhead, carrying a brown trout in its talons, right over my head, maybe 30, 40 feet up. Right. Yeah.
Taunting you.
Having a better day than I was. Yeah. Betty's in Northeast Baltimore giving us a ring on midday. Hi, Betty.
Hello, Dan, and thank you for having this wonderful program on Earth Day. But I wanted to let you know that in the city, in Herring Run Park, in the Hall Spring area, we have seen the great blue heron, the great egret, and the little green heron fishing in the stream at the little falls where the old sewer lines used to lay. And as you know, the water in Herring Run is not always at its best.
No.
But no.
They are a sight to behold when you see them fishing. And also the comment about the scarlet tanager, we do see them regularly in Herring Run Park, but only for a very brief period. They must be nesting somewhere further north, but probably the end of April till mid-May.
And they come through.
Yes, the scarlet tanager.
Hey,
they are beautiful.
Thank you for that, Betty. Yeah, I got to keep my eye out for another one of those. You know what she was saying about Herring Run, though? Those birds, maybe they're desperate, but those birds would not be there if there wasn't a food source. Right,
and they do fish, and that's what Dave was concerned about is, what are they eating? Herring Run water quality is not good, as is the case in most of the city.
Hmm. Let's take another call. Chuck in Hamden, thank you for calling Midday.
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
You don't have to go stomping all over the woods of Maryland to see a lot of wildlife. Two nights ago, I saw a silver fox going up Hickory Avenue. in 1 year here, I lived behind 3838 Roland. We had a pair of peregrine falcons meet and mate on the top of 3838 Roland. And then later in the year, they brought their babies, two birds, back to 3838, because we always have a big sparrow population in the area because of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
They eat grass seed. And so they taught the babies to hunt there, and then they abandoned them there. At about the same time that was going on, we had a mating pair of kestrels stay in the area for about a week. I was really surprised to see that. I'd only seen one in my entire career outdoors.
Yeah, same here.
And then we had a gear falcon that was hanging around all summer. And this is, and that year the butterfly, the monarch migration picked my yard to come through.
What a lucky man.
In an hour, you would see 150 to 200 monarch butterflies go streaming west.
What did you do,
Dan? My yard.
What did you do, Chuck? Did you put something out for them? Some honey, some grape jelly?
I have five 12 inch diameter bird baths that I refill every day.
And the butterflies like those?
Well, I also have a really nice herb garden. And some of the butterflies come in to feed during the summer.
They like that herb.
I've got a really amazing insect population out there.
Hey, I have a question for you before we go to the next caller. Thank you for this story and report. What happened to the peregrines? Have they been back?
No, we had a large group of subfamily group of crows move into the area.
Oh.
And the peregrines disappeared.
Oh. A murder of crows.
They're peregrines at Conowingo.
You see peregrines at Conowingo,
yep.
too.
And they don't get along with the eagles. There's a friction.
How many kinds of birds have you seen up there? I mean, long list, isn't it?
You name it, Baltimore Orioles. There's about 300 great blue heron nests across the river. And woodpeckers, pileated woodpeckers,
right.
You name it.
Right.
Actually, if you go even south of the dam to Susquehanna Park, a large variety of birds and wildlife. Very good area, mostly because of the Susquehanna River.
And lots of shorebirds.
Nan in Chester, Maryland. Hello, Nan.
Hello, Dan. I wanted to tell you that in our backyard in Severna Park, we had a pair of scarlet tanagers that seemed to live there because we would see them so often. The male had a beautiful coloring.
Oh, it's amazing.
The female had kind of a, I was just reading my Audubon bird book, and it says it's an olive green. I call it a yellow, and down on its breast is more yellow,
and
the female.
Nan, how long ago was that you saw the scarlet tanagers? Is this recent?
It was probably about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And
I'm in a 10-year tanager drought, so, folks, if you've never had a chance to see one, but you got to look, right? And you got to go to the right areas. You got to go to wooded areas,
right,
on the edges
right.
of forests like that. Rona had another story she wanted to share with us today. This one is not as happy a story as the yellow-crowned night heron. It has to do with a little frog and with a virus.
Yes, this is a virus called Ronavirus that they've just discovered in Maryland in 2001, and they really started to learn more about it in 2002 and 2003 when the Intercounty Connector was being built, and the biologists for the state were moving all of these turtles to get them to a safe place, and they noticed that the turtles were sick, and they discovered this virus called the Ronavirus. Rana is Latin for frog, and this virus is transmitted through frogs, by frogs and through frogs, but it can also go to salamanders and turtles. And it's showing up in a lot of places in Maryland and in areas where the Ronavirus is in the water, up to 90% of the population of frogs will die from it.
And what happens? It gets into the water that they're in, or they absorb it through their skin?
Exactly. So it gets into the water that they're in, and the frogs absorb it through their skin. Other animals then will get it either through the water from contact with frogs or from eating the eggs that the frogs lay. And biologists are trying to discover more about this because a lot of times by the time they get to an area where they believe the virus to be, the die-off has already occurred.
Oh, you mean it's fatal?
Yes. And so it kills the frogs within hours, tadpoles
where
and
where
frogs.
Is this happening, Rona? You say Prince George's County?
Well, the first case was Prince George's, and then it was Montgomery. But all throughout Maryland, there are spots. Oregon Ridge has had some documented cases. Hereford County has had a documented case of a box turtle with it. So nature centers are on alert, and Maryland Department of Natural Resources has a study ongoing to try to determine where the virus is and to try to get ahead of it. There are some things you can do to prevent the virus. One thing you can do is just be careful about washing nets when you're – a lot of these nature centers have frog walks and tadpole walks where they go and they look at fish and they use a net and they pull out the tadpole and show the kids to make sure that those nets are washed, similar to the sort of things they do for that that algae that was all over the gunpowder not long ago that's called rock snot. I forget what the technical
Didymo.
Term. Didymo, yeah. So, you know, sort of the same kinds of provisions, washing your equipment, washing your feet if you're in the water.
And they think this can prevent the spread of the infection?
Yes, you know, just to keep things clean, and also to, if you know that you have infected animals, to try to keep them away from other animals, which is difficult to do because the signs of the virus are so swift to kill.
I was in Deer Creek last week fishing for shad, and over on the edge of Deer Creek, saw the most amazing sight of toads multiplying, toads trying to multiply and laying the eggs. It was an amazing sight, a cluster of eggs like I've never seen before, and must have been 40 or 50 toads. I guess they're the spring peepers, right?
Yeah.
They weren't peeping. They were doing something else. And anyway, so I went back to fishing, but it was a pretty amazing scene from nature. By the way, you have tadpoles?
I have tadpoles.
You have babies?
Yes, and I'm a Jewish mother. I'm worried about my tadpoles. I'm over
because of this infection?
I'm probably overfeeding them. well, it started because we have some friends who bought a house that backs to the Loch Raven Reservoir, and my daughter was over their house, and she was in the tadpole pond and found some tadpoles and said, "Can we keep them?" And reluctantly, we agreed, and they've become a huge pain. But nonetheless, it's fun to watch her be excited about them and to see what they're doing. And I actually, when I interviewed the biologist from DNR about the rhinovirus, I mentioned that I had tadpoles, and I took pictures of my tadpoles and sent them to him to see if they had the virus, because I was starting to worry, like a hypochondriac, you know, a rhinochondriac, worrying about my tadpoles. And so I sent them to him, and he said, "No, they don't have the rhinovirus, but the bad news, they are nowhere near ready to become frogs. So I have to keep them alive for another 3 months."
That's funny. Well, report back to us, will you?
Yes, I will.
Karen writes by email, going back to our subject of the yellow-crowned night herons, Rona, "My husband and I have been watching and photographing these in the past 3 years. The past 3 weeks. There was a nesting pair in our neighborhood in 2008 in the Lake Walker Annesley neighborhood that got the Maryland Ornithological Society out to document the pair with 3 offspring. They would walk on my neighbor's above-ground pool's cover below the tree where they were nesting." And Karen sent some photographs for us to see. Thank you, Karen. Maybe we can post those on our Facebook page, along with the photographs of Dave Lichtenheim. You can find them on my Facebook page. And Dave, again, thank you for being here today and sharing that
with
us. And if you got pictures of the eggs, maybe we can get those up there. Oh, they'll be in your folio later on.
Tonight.
Okay, great. And Rona, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. We produce this show once a month, Midday on the Bay, in collaboration with Rona and the Bay Journal. You can get a free subscription of the Bay Journal at ChesapeakeBayJournal.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Facebook as well. And
it's still free?
It's still free. Please subscribe.
Very good.
Like us on Facebook.
Thank you, Rona. Thank you again. And happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
See you, folks.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR your NPR news station.